The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media Interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. I love rock and roll, and I love Joan Jett. And that was never more apparent to me than when I went back and listened to my December 23rd, 1983 telephone interview with Joan, probably for the St. Petersburg Times. We talked about all kinds of stuff, and she just talked and talked and talked, and I loved every minute of it. A lot of my interviews from that era did not survive, thanks to really inferior tape recorders and mostly tapes from that era, cassette recording. And I was very fortunate to find that this one is still good, and you can hear it quite well. In this interview, coming up, Joan was just wrapping up 4 years nonstop of being on the road following Bad Reputation, I Love Rock and Roll, and Fake Friends, which we talk about a bit here. She also talks about her depression on leaving the Runaways and that time between leaving the Runaways and recording Bad Reputation, which was kind of a, she describes it as a solo record, but the beginning of the Blackhearts, and meeting Kenny Laguna, who helped her with Bad Reputation and then became a very integral to what she went on to do. As a matter of fact, Kenny, you'll hear him at one moment in this interview taking credit for being a genius. So there's that. Anyway, she was delightful to interview, and I'm resurrecting this today. It is actually September 22nd, 2014. It is Joan's 56th birthday. How is it possible that Joan Jett is 56. I must have it wrong. Let's just leave it at that. I hope you'll enjoy this interview, one of the Mr. Media classics from the past.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
All right. Thanks for taking the time out. I know you guys are pretty busy.
Oh, no problem. It's almost Christmas. It's that time of year. I'm in New York, you know, just saying Merry Christmas to everybody. It's a little bit hectic, but...
Is that home for you?
Yeah, it is now.
Oh.
In New York, I live. Now that I'm home, when we're on the road, we were just pretty much on the road for about 4 years with no more than 3 weeks off at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's going to be like really the way I consider it.
Do you think
the first time I've been off, after Christmas, after we come to Florida, after New Year's, that'll be like our first, vacation. We'll be making a new album, all that stuff
good.
To get ready for
good.
Release in spring.
How much time we have off?
I'm sure I'll be able to get whatever I want, but not
good.
More than a month, or I'll probably get itchy after, I'd say, a month or so.
Yeah.
I'll probably go someplace weird, not weird, but someplace where, I can really relax, because it's difficult to relax.
You of all people have certainly earned it.
Sometimes it gets real. I went down to Paradise Island. You must know where that is.
Oh, yeah.
South Florida, right?
Yeah.
But I thought it was, way down by South America. And I walked there. We had, 4 days off, and I was going to try and relax a little bit. And I walked in there, and it was, the biggest casino hotel. And, right away, as soon as I walked in, it was, people all over me. And I thought, picked the wrong place to relax. So I think I'll go someplace foreign, Germany or France or a combination.
Well, you must have a good following over there too, though.
Yeah, but see, the difference is they can't speak fluent English. So if somebody wants to have a conversation with you, whereas in the States, a lot of times, people, they mean well, mm-hmm. And it's not like they don't say they want to talk to you, but they wind up asking you the same questions they would ask you if they were interviewing you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, after a while, it gets a little bit intense. And if you want to relax, if you're going on a vacation, you know, you've got to go someplace where you're not going to get asked these things. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to wind down.
Right.
Plus, you'll never be able to relax, and then there's no point. So I've got to go someplace where, and, you know, really concentrate on relaxing, because I'm not the relaxed type. I'm very... I'm a hyper type person. I'm very energetic, and, you know, it takes a lot to really tire me out. I mean, you know, I'm thinking about the end, 4 years on the road. I try and wonder how I'm going to come down from being on the road.
Were your friends and family trying to, at some point during that 4 years, trying to pull you off and say, come on, Joan, take a break. You've accomplished so much. You deserve some time off. And you just kept pressing? Or how did it turn into such a long time?
Well, the reason it did turn into such a long time, when we started out, when the Black Hearts got together, and we started out doing like a month, we'd get a month of dates. You know, maybe there were Northeast playing clubs, and we, you know, but we'd have places to play for about a month. We'd go out on the road. And about 3 weeks into that tour, our booking agent, or who was booking us then, I think it was FBI, and they're still booking us now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at, like, with 1 week left, they would call up and say, we just found another 2 months of dates. Do you want to do them? And we said yes, because it was, you know, the Black Hearts, we had just pretty much gotten together, and we needed as much work as we could possibly get out in front of people, you know, for the live experience, because I think that's very, very important that bands get out and play. And it was sort of, it was just a repeat over and over again. We'd almost be finished with those 2 months of dates, and then somebody would come up, well, you've been offered a whole tour, you've been offered this, you've been offered that. So there was never really, we didn't want to slow down, because we felt, you know, slowly that the Black Hearts were building, and that people were starting to overlook the fact that I was in the Runaways, and they didn't really care anymore. It was like, so what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, so what if she was in the Runaways?
Well, you said...
And it slowly started to turn, and we just wound up being on tour, and we did I Love Rock and Roll.
Mm-hmm.
It was more or less just us coming off the road, going into the studio and recording songs that we had written or added to the show in, the, say, like the last 6 months. So the I Love Rock and Roll album was pretty much just any songs that had not been recorded on Bad Reputation, you know, that were new, that were in the show.
Right.
So we just, you know, that's what I Love Rock and Roll was.
Did,
and we all know what that did. And then with this latest album, we came off our last tour. It's hard to divide up. It ended December 20th, 1982.
Right.
And the last gig was in Hawaii, so that was nice. You know, in December.
Mm.
Didn't have to come back to New York. But at the beginning of the year, right after New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day, we went back to New York. We knew that we had to write another album, and that it was the one that followed I Love Rock and Roll. And we could feel sort of the pressure that people were trying to put on us. You know, like, what are you going to do now? You
right.
know, it was like that sort of, yeah, it's such a big hit with I Love Rock and Roll. What if you don't succeed again? You know, and that, I mean, you can't sit there and think like that. You'll drive yourself crazy. You'll get paranoid and weird. We just said, you know, we're going to sit down and write the best rock and roll album we can write at this time, and that's what we did. And I think that we really did a good job. And I'm not saying that in a conceited or pompous way. I just think that we came out and did something different than what everybody expected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone expected that maybe that we might go a little bit softer, or do a lot of the heavy-duty glitter drums and all that stuff. So we came out with something that people didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like my voice being a little bit louder in the mix, drier, not so much echo on it, because I felt very strong, and I wanted people to hear my voice. And we use things like horns and violins, but you can't really even hear it.
Right.
You know, unless you listen.
I thought that the...
But it's much... I think it's very raw sounding.
Yeah, I thought it made it seemed like a more appropriate follow-up to Bad Reputation than to the I Love Rock and Roll. I Love Rock and Roll. It just it seemed like it was more in sequence with that than the middle album. I don't know why.
Yeah, maybe it has to do with just the way things fell into place. You know, when you remember that Bad Reputation, pretty much, I mean, technically it's a solo album. You know, I mean, it's just me. The only consistent musicians on that are Kenny Laguna and myself on every track, and the rest, you know, they were switched. We had some guys from Blondie played on the album, and Steve Jones and Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols, or the ex-Sex Pistols at that time, and a London-based band that played a lot of the basic tracks with us. So then All of Rock and Roll was Bill Blackheart's first album, even though if you look at Bad Reputation, you can tell we were already in the works with a band. I was already thinking about it. We had already thought of the name. And that's why there's a black heart on the Bad Reputation album cover.
Right.
Even though it's a solo album, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the band was already in, you know, we were working and stuff.
Tell me a bit about, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm getting clicks on this end.
I'm hearing them too.
Okay. I don't know. We got some services on this phone, but nobody's explained to me how they work. Tell me a little bit about the time between the Runaways and the Bad Reputation album. I've seen the video for the song Bad Reputation, which is a very, you know, it's a real funny, and it's also it's sarcastic and it's a little mean, but it's mostly funny about all the places that, you know, turn you down and things like that. What transpired between the time of the end of the Runaways and the beginning of Bad Reputation? And
well, besides depression, not much. I mean, I did a few things. I think I was probably the busiest of all the girls, you know, after the band broke up. But I mean, it was like a really heavy blow to me. It took me about a month just to realize, you know, the Runaways was my life. You know, I was like 19 years old and the band was gone of my own doing. I was the one that quit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, you know, we're just not, it's not going to work. And we all knew it. And after the band broke up, it was very scary. The first thing I did, I went to England in March of 79, and I did three songs with Steve Jones and Paul Cook, two of which are on the Bad Reputation album.
Mm-hmm.
And the third song was I Love Rock and Roll, which wound up on the B-side of a Dutch single that was only released in Holland and found its way in import to, you know, the East Coast and the West Coast, and some radio stations started playing I Love Rock and Roll, but with Steve Jones and Paul Cook playing.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so the next thing I did, sometime in the summer of 79, I produced an album by a band called The Germs, an LA, I guess, the punk band of Los Angeles.
Hmm.
I produced their album because they asked me to. They were Runaways fans, and I guess they thought, since I've been in the studio several times, I knew what I was doing. And it turned out, I mean, if you're into their music, it was really, a lot of people were, you know, they said I did a good job, because to capture the Germs on vinyl is something that's really hard to do. I mean, it's like they're a very outrageous band, or they were. And it was very interesting for me to be on the other side and have to make the decision, you know, instead of just being in the band and being on the other side and wanting to make some suggestions and stuff. Here, I had, you know, it's like I had to pick what was the best basic track, I had to pick the best vocal, things like that, where with your own album, you don't necessarily have to do. You help, you know, but then there's Kenny and Richie that are also there to do that. And anyway, moving on, later in that year, that's when I met Kenny Laguna and Richie Cordell. And they noticed what sort of, you know, that I wasn't doing anything, I wasn't in a band, and we had been writing songs together, and we got along real well, like best friends right off the bat. And I didn't know who these guys were. There were some guys from New York, you know, and here I'm in LA, and I'm depressed and no confidence whatsoever. And Kenny, for some reason, was really, I don't know, he thought there was something there.
Well, when you left the Runaways, did you feel, had you thought about, and did you have the confidence to strike out on your own, or were you thinking in terms of getting together with another band?
Well, I wanted to be in another band, definitely, but I mean, confidence as far as just like, you know, being in the Runaways, we were extremely cut down. I mean, you think of the worst thing you can call a girl, okay, right now, think about it in your head, and then think even way worse than that, and that's what people used to constantly do to us every day in the Runaways, and it was you know, after you hear it for so many times, I guess after the band broke up, you sort of started to believe it. I felt like every time I walked around Los Angeles, it was like people would be saying, ha, 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 they finally broke up, and there you are, Joan Jett, walking down the street with nothing. Now, and that's what it felt like. It could have been a little bit, you know, of me. You know, and then maybe my own imagination was getting away with myself. But after I met Kenny, I mean, it was like a big change because he said, let's, you know, we've already got these songs. You've got the songs that you wrote with Steve Jones and Paul Cook. And since Kenny had just been working in England with the Who organization, he said, let's go to England and make an album, make a solo album.
It was a genius!
That must be Kenny.
That's Kenny. And the Who organization were nice enough to let me do Bad Reputation on credit. I mean, that's like a lot of money, and they just let me go in the studio and record it. And they said, go do your album, and when you can pay us, pay the studio.
Yeah.
And that's what they said. We finished the Bad Reputation album, and nobody wanted it, you know, and we offered it to everybody. Everybody in America, every record label you can think of, all the big ones, all the little ones, nobody wanted it. We offered it for free.
Why?
For free.
Why do you suppose you had such a problem with it? Was it you're talking about crashing guitars and a woman who's coming on extremely strong. Was that totally different than what was being played at the time?
That's probably the closest reason. It's just the fact that I won't conform to what other people tell me to do, what they think a girl should be like, you know? I mean, my parents didn't teach me that I had to act like anything. You know, I mean, they didn't sit there, you know, they didn't bring me up that way. It's like, I remember watching the first, you know, the first time a guy landed on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I must have been like 6 or 5 or something like that. I was young. I remember, I can't remember hardly anything except the guy being on the moon. And I remember saying to my parents that, wow, I want to be the first girl on the moon. And they said, you can do that if you want.
Hmm.
You know, so it was like they always had that sort of, that attitude. They never said, well, you can't do that because you're a girl and it's not ladylike.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they never even gave me that sort of, that thought never entered my mind. So I was like really shocked when I was hearing from other people that, you know, girls can't play rock and roll. Why do you, you know, what makes you think you can do it? You know, it's like, at that time, I would blow up. Now, I'll just say, hey, man, if a girl can play a violin or a cello in just about every symphony orchestra in the country, in the world, she can damn sure play a guitar and drums in a rock and roll band.
Right.
I mean, and right there, nobody can answer to that. You tell me one person that can give me an answer to what I just said. Why the girls can't play rock and roll?
Well, you're not...
Your hands are too small? You know, after a while, I learned how to deal with it. I think the Runaways were a really good learning experience on many, on so many different levels. Musically, learning how to deal with an audience, being in a band, just learning how to be in a band and what you have to go through.
And I guess the worst of circumstances, too.
Yeah, and the worst. And, you know, you go through being really cut down. You go through being poor. You know, I mean, really poor. You know, it's like you ate yesterday, so you don't eat today. But I think, and it taught me a lot about people, you know, real fast. You know, it was just something I think I would always do again if I had the chance, because you just can't learn about life like that in school.
Yeah.
You just can't. And it's, I look back fondly on the Runaways, you know, it taught me a lot. And, I don't know, it probably gave me a little bit of a built-in defensive mechanism, you know. As far as people coming at me as you know, girls and rock, you know, I don't like to be compared like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're going to make a category, when they start talking about Italian rock and Jewish rock, they can make a category for women rock. But until then, throw me in with the Rolling Stones and the Who and everybody else. You know, I'm sure these other girls don't like to get compared to me constantly, you know?
I can't. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone I'd put in the same category with you as far as
but the
music.
But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I do. I mean,
there are the people that say...
Well, first of all, there's very few that play, you know, that play an instrument.
Yeah. Yes.
There's plenty that are leading groups of singing.
Yes.
But I can't think of many men who can play the guitar like you do. So.
Well, I'm pretty basic. I mean, I'm just a basic rhythm guitar player.
Right.
They can play a bit of Chuck Berry leads and, you know, very simple. I guess, you know, I play very slow. I like slide guitar a lot, you know, so I've really gotten into it over the last year and a half as far as, you know, you don't have to be technically a whiz, I don't think. You don't have to be able to run up and down the fingerboard like Ritchie Blackmore to be able to play to play slide guitar. It's more of a feel sort of thing, and I think it's really interesting because on the last album we experimented with it, and on Fake Friends, right at the end, if you listen, next time you hear Fake Friends, if you listen real close, right at the very end of the song, there's slide guitar. And that's me. It's the first time I ever did it, ever, you know, for on record or anything. But it's something that's very interesting. It's like I can watch the band progress as far as musicians, but it's not like a change in direction. It's just a subtle, hey, we play basic rock and roll this much more better. You know, we did this much more better a year and a half later, you know, from being on the road.
Right.
You know, you subtly play better and play your parts, but you play them differently just because, I don't know, it's really hard to explain. I guess that's what is the growth in a musician, you know, expanding and things.
Let me ask you about the new album before we get too far from it. It doesn't seem to have made as big a commercial splash as the last one.
What's commercial?
Well, I love rock and roll was getting rotation in a lot of areas there, almost every other hour.
Yeah, but I Love Rock and Roll is one of the biggest singles in the past 20 years.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's like...
Well, Frank...
I wouldn't look... You know, I mean, it's like, it was just, you know, I don't know. That was just amazing. I don't know how to explain it or anything. But, I mean, I certainly, you know, we've had two hits off this album already, and it's sitting right under platinum. I've already got my gold one. So for people who don't think this album's done well, they better, you know, turn around and look again.
Well, I'm glad to be corrected on that. I like the album. I haven't heard, as far as radio play, I haven't heard it. I remember they snuck, when Fake Friends was released as a single ahead of the album, I remember hearing it a few times, and it just seemed to have disappeared, at least in this area. You know, I can only speak for here. What I was going to ask you, though, was about the choosing of Everyday People and Tossin' and Turnin'. Everyday People kind of, I don't know, it seemed like it stuck out it stuck out on the album. It seemed like an odd choice.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, was it? Well, we didn't put on the background vocals, because then it would really sound funny. Well, we had, like, we did background vocals to that song that were just, like, sliced horns.
Uh-huh.
You know, the da-da-da-da-da-da. We did a bunch of vocals like that. I don't know. When I was looking through Kenny's record collection, I seemed to be very lucky when I looked through there.
Hmm.
And we came upon Sly's Greatest Hits. And I remember always liking him. I always liked him from when I was like a little kid. I remember seeing him on TV with the hats on, and I just always thought he was very charismatic. And I remember like his hits, Everyday People. No, I don't remember that one as well. I think that was the earlier one. But the other ones, like Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself.
Right.
I Want to Take You Higher. It just, a lot of those messages seem to be like the sort of song I would want to sing.
That's funny. That was lyrics. I Want to Take You Higher was the one, when I saw that you had done a Sly song, that was the one I would have expected.
Yeah, but see, then you get into a thing where I think the band would have to change the way we play musically. It wouldn't sound like the Blackhearts.
Had you been doing Everyday People as part of the show?
No, we did not.
It was just, you came across it in the record collection?
Yeah.
Is it part of the show now?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
And it took, that was a difficult one to learn, even though it sounds so simple, you know, because you've those, even it's a two-chord song. The reason that I think that we settled on that song is because so many people, they sit there and they talk to me, or they, you know, they'll speak with me, they'll hear about me, they'll do this, and then 5 minutes later they'll say, yeah, but what you really like really like? You know, and they'll say, but she's really like that. And I'll say, yeah, but sure, but what's she really like? But I just, you know, it's like, it started out as just, I wanted to do the song because it just said, hey, I'm just like you guys. I'm just normal and regular like you guys. I'm no different. You know, I laugh, I cry, and I bleed when I'm cut. You know, it's, that's how it started out. And the fact that there was no real musical changes as far as style, we didn't have to play funky. Or, you know, the way Sly and the Family Stone, that was their style.
Right.
That's not the Blackheart style.
Right.
Whereas Everyday People just dropped right into our style. Because it didn't have a different, it wasn't necessarily real funky or anything like that, where we would have to change anything we were doing. We just pretty much did, I think ours is just a little bit faster than Sly's, and that's about the only difference.
When you
I'll go, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I like it because I liked it more and more because of what the lyrics say.
When you go in to get started on the next album, will it be some of the more popular covers again, like in Everyday People or Tossing and Turning, Crimson and Clover, that kind of thing?
It's real hard to say because, see, we don't go into the studio necessarily planning to put covers on. You know, I mean, it's like I'm writing like a maniac right now. And, you know, it's like, I'm sure we'll have plenty of material, but it's just, it boils down to, again, what you want to give your audience the best rock and roll album you can give them. And that's what it boils down to, not ego, seeing your name on every song. You know, I'm not worried. I know that one of these days, and maybe it will be the next album, it'll be all original, but, you know, I just don't see the big deal. Why, you know, people, they, I don't know, it just doesn't seem be so important. One, did people ask the Rolling Stones why their first 7 singles were recover songs? People asked Pat Benatar if she wrote Hit Me With Your Best Shot. You know, I mean, why do they ask me? You know, I'm just curious.
Maybe because the vast...
cover songs, and I'm the only one that's asked about it.
Maybe the vast majority of the ones you do are just that much better as far as covers go.
Maybe you're right.
Tossing and Turning, you know.
Yeah, well, see,
they're good covers.
Turning, you know what Tossing and Turning? That was just a Blackheart-style sounding song to me. That reminded me of, say, like, I don't know if you're familiar with the I Love Rock and Roll album.
Oh, yeah, I got it right in front of me.
Oh, okay, you know the song Nag.
Uh-huh. It's on my mind, as a matter of fact.
Sort of style, you know?
Yep.
It fits into that same sort of style, and I couldn't sleep at all last night. It really grabbed me because that's exactly what happened. I was sitting up like all night long, like trying to write songs, watching TV with the TV really low, just playing guitar. And you know those albums that they put out, like party albums with, you know, a double album set with the oldies.
Right.
You know, so I'm sitting there and I'm playing my guitar, and all of a sudden I couldn't sleep at all. That Bobby Lewis, I guess it is. And it just seemed to, you know, strike a chord. I don't mean to, no pun intended.
No, I understand. Well, that and, you forgive me because I can't remember the title of the song. I don't have a Bad Reputation album in front of me. It's around the corner. There was a cover on that. It was a song that was also in Animal House. It was,
Shout.
Shout, thank you. The two of those, I thought were just, they were really great.
I never even heard Shout before we did that.
Yeah.
I mean, I had never heard it before Kenny played it for me, and then he played it for me, and I said, well, yeah, it's a great song, but I don't really see how we can, you know, do it and fit our style. You know, when you listen to the Isley Brothers version,
right?
You know, the really old one, and then you listen to ours, and then we just sat and worked on it and tried to. We just said, well, let's make it fast and something that was very different from me that I'd never done, like the shooby doo wop and bop background.
Uh-huh.
Was really fun because Kenny prides himself on being a background singer, you know, and doing background vocals, and I do too. It's like, that's one thing that I do a lot of on albums. I can sing the leads and the background vocals, and I don't know.
You must run across this. Do you get a kick out of the kids who've only heard your version of some of these songs, who think, wow, you know?
Oh, yeah, I do get a nice big kick out of it.
Well,
you know, see, because you never really take anything away. That's the dangerous thing. You don't want to take away from the original.
Right.
You just want to make, you know, you just want to make the song yours, but you don't want to like, take it away. I mean, Everyday People will always be Sly's song, but it's also been done Blackheart style, and so is Tossin' and Turnin' and Crimson and Clover. Even though it's a Tommy James song, you know, people can still look at it and say, well, it's also a Blackheart song. You know, it's like we, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
Like we don't take it and make it a completely different song. It's still the other person's song. We just adapt it to our style. So it is our song, sort of, but it's not, you know, like ripping anybody off or anything.
Now, tell me a bit about Kenny. I know he's, like you said, he worked with him right at the beginning there, and you met him. I see he's got production credit on I Love Rock and Roll, and who knows what else you're talking about him singing. How total is his involvement with the band, and, you know?
Extreme. I mean, I would consider him another member of the band.
Hmm.
Really?
That's why I was just looking over the albums. I was curious to see if he had any kind of musical.
Yes, he plays keyboards on all the albums, and a lot of times on the basic track.
Huh.
We find the keyboards tend to fatten. If you have them down low enough in the mix, they tend to make the guitars nice and fat, so you don't have to sit there and overdub your guitar a million times. You play your guitar once, so it sounds real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it sounds like it does when we come down and we play in Florida. You know, it's like the guitars on the latest album will sound the same as they do live, you know what I mean?
Right.
But Kenny's involvement is, I mean, originally he was just our producer, and we could not find anybody to manage us,
mm-hmm.
or to manage me, forget us. It was like nobody wanted anything to do with me. It was like severe. I mean, people just, no way.
That must have really hurt after coming off the Blackhearts, the Runaways, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I guess I'd gotten used to people just thinking I was bad news.
Mm.
You
know, you mentioned, I don't mean to jump around, but earlier you had mentioned your parents, a bit of their influence. And I guess maybe because of the Runaways, the band kind of gave the impression that the girls are, you know, I don't know, depending on what part of the country you grew up in, the bad girls are not, you know, that no respect for their parents, none of this. Were you close with your parents? Was there a good...
very close. All of us were. You know, we called our parents, you know, all the time to let them know. In fact, when we went to England for the first time, we took one of the girls' mothers came with us as a chaperone because we were 16 years old, man. You can't go around the world without a chaperone, you know? I mean, on things like that.
Right.
Like, Annabella from Balawell had a chaperone, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
She was only 15 to come over to the United States.
Yeah, she had one so, when I met her.
I mean, yeah, like our parents, I think all our parents were very supportive. See, I think the thing about the Runaways that really bothered people, and they knew it deep down inside, they knew that we were right as far as we weren't weird, we weren't acting funny. We all came from basically middle-class suburban homes. You know, middle-class suburban homes that went, you know, that was it. Nobody lived in any urban city. It was all, you know, suburban. That's what it was. We were five regular teenage girls. And the thing that I think got everybody up in arms is just the fact that we talked about what girls are, you know, what girls are like. Girls at 15, I don't care what anyone says, they do smoke, they do swear. They do talk about sex, and they do sometimes drink. That's just the truth. I mean, you know, that's the way life is. And if anybody wants to go look at prowling around the schoolyards to check it out, and you know, I mean, that's just...
I'll get back to you in an hour.
Huh?
No.
All the boys can smoke, and they can drink, and they can swear and talk about sex, but the girls can't. What are they... A girl's locker room is so much... The language is much more dirtier than I think in a boy's.
Hmm.
I mean, girls, they confide in each other, where boys, I think, especially at that age, might tend to be a little bit more shy about talking about things. With girls, they do. They come out and talk about things with their friends. And the fact that we opened up to the press and letting everybody know, hey, this is just the way girls are, they didn't think that. They wanted to just say, hey, these are bad girls, which is not true.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple quick things, and I'll let you go.
Okay, because I'm getting pressure.
Okay, just real quick. You're coming down with 38 Special. Have you worked with them before?
Never have.
Does it strike you at all as an let's just call it an unusual pairing? It's a, they're not they're not southern like Molly Hatchet, but they are more of a southern rock band. Is it one of the more unusual pairings that you've done?
Well, I'm sure, yes, it's definitely, but we've done so many different kinds. I mean, this year alone, besides all the, we've done over 200 concerts, and a lot of them were headline days, but we've done 10 concerts with the Police.
That's what I thought, yeah.
We did 5 concerts with ZZ Top in Texas, and 1 in Boston. And we did 40 concerts with Loverboy. And it's just so, that's like a very different, you know, that's 3 bands with really different sounds.
I was just curious. I
would think that we would do really well with 38 Special, because bottom line is they are a rock band, rock and roll band, right?
Right.
They are.
Right.
And so are we. And I think if, you know, everybody just looks at it that way and doesn't look and say, oh, she's wearing a leather jacket, she must be a punk. You know, it's like, you just go to the concert and you just have a good time.
I was curious because I spoke to Don Barnes of 38 Special yesterday as part of the same thing, and I asked him the same question, and he said that they look for a band that can that could be as powerful as they're going to be when they come on, and he said he was looking forward to working with y'all because of just that reason.
Oh, great.
You know,
because I've never seen them live, and it's like, it's pretty much, at least over the past several years, you know, it's like, it's very difficult to meet your peers, except for the people that you're playing with, because we're on the road so much, it's not like we're going to, you know, these parties and meeting different bands and things like that. We meet who we play with.
Right.
So it's like, that's about it. And it's really interesting to be able to talk to the people from other bands and see what they think, and especially, I think that's really nice that he said that.
Yeah, he did, because I was curious, because for me...
Florida's one of our best states, I gotta get that in there.
Oh.
One of my favorite places to play.
Well, I was good.
Definitely.
38.
Audience reaction.
38 and the Black Arts are 2 bands that I've wanted to see for a long time, and it's very convenient that you're playing together, and so we had gotten to talking about that. I was curious, and you know, it's a little different. You're talking about, when you talk about southern rockers, you're talking about guys with a reputation for being very, I guess, unthinking towards women, heavy drinkers, et cetera, et cetera. They don't particularly have that reputation, but and then they're going to work with a band that's led by a woman who has the same kind of reputation that most of these guys have. So it's kind of interesting. Reputation in musical terms.
Yeah.
Understand that.
Yeah. We're going to do our best to warm them up for them.
All right. Last thing I want to ask you. Last thing, and I'll let you go. Do you feel as we're cracking 83 and heading into 84 that do you feel successful in what you're doing? Do you feel like you're attaining whatever goals you set?
Well, I think the main goal that I set out to achieve, I've already achieved it, and that's to be in the history books.
Hmm.
So, like, when they write all those big books, when they write the one about classical music, and they write the one about jazz, and they write the one about blues, and then they write the one about rock and roll, I want to be in there as having done something important for music. And I think, from what other people tell me anyway, they said that I'm already there. I don't know yet. I personally, I'd rather stick around for at least another 20 years to make sure that definitely does happen, you know.
Mm.
I just want to do something good for music and make people happy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the main objective. But I suppose, yeah, a lot of goals have been achieved, like, you know, wanting to be famous,
mm-hmm.
you know, being in a rock and roll band. That was the original. When I got into a band, it wasn't anything like the money or the limos or things like that. It was from going to a concert and seeing a band on stage, and what the band on stage did to the audience, and how they would get them so excited. That's what attracted me, was the stage, not the other things. The other things are fringe benefits, you know? And it's like, being on stage is everything to me. It really is.
Oh.
It's so scary. Coming
from someone who spent 4 years on the road, I would kind of expect that. And if you didn't say that, I think I'd be disappointed.
No, I know. It's gonna be, well, coming down to Florida, we're doing our last 5 concerts of this whole 4-year ordeal tour, and I don't know how I'm going to come down after this. It's very difficult to, you know, try and unpack my suitcase. I don't know. I'll probably stay packed till next door. So.
Just keep that same suitcase and go out and buy new clothes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Listen, thanks so much for your time.
Okay.
And have a real nice holiday.
How's the weather been down there, by the way?
Well, the last couple days, yesterday was real nice. The last couple days have been kind of cloudy.
Is it worth bringing a bathing suit?
I think maybe. I would bring it.
I'll bring it.
Yesterday was the first day in a week that we had a warm enough weather for the beach, and then today it just kind of clouded up again.
Okay. Because I know it was really hot in Miami.
Yeah.
I'm also going to be down there. So.
Go for it. Bring the bathing suit.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So, Bob, you're going to be at the gig? Oh, yeah. You said you were going
to. Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Like, I haven't looked forward to a show in a long time.
Okay, well, if you get a chance, come backstage and say hello.
I'd like that. Thank you for so much time.
Okay, wait. Well,
Do you want to go
to the okay. You'll be taken care of as far as getting backstage and stuff.
Oh, good. I appreciate
Karen
that.
Karen or Elliot, the road manager, will get to you or something.
All right, sounds all right. Good. Have yourself a real Merry Christmas.
You too.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank news and comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Mark and Lowell Show. Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Asid to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like,
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know. But it's great because what happens without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place very sinister and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie. And the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes, "Is he black?"
Right here on the Realm Network.